Hello and welcome to Law Report Summer, where we bring you some of our favourite programs from 2016. Today, acquired brain injury, or ABI. Why are people with ABIs so overrepresented in our criminal justice system?
Using drugs since I was 12, I find it very hard remembering things. It's pretty much fried.
42% of men in prison and 33% of women in prison had a confirmed ABI.
Whether you got an ABI or not, there's a standover world in there. You know, you're still a big dog.
Dave, not his real name, is a member of a self-advocacy group called the Enabling Justice Project. Dave and the other participants want to raise awareness about what it's like to live with an acquired brain injury and talk about why so many people with an ABI end up in prison.
How does it affect me? Mainly my memory, probably decisions and that too, like deciding what to do, when to do it, you know?
Do you know what caused your ABI?
Two things, right? One, I used to be on morphine drugs, and the head-on smash that was worse, that made it a lot worse, I reckon, for sure.
When did you start your drug use, and when did you have your car accident?
I started drugs probably when I was about 11, and when I had the car accident was probably 5-6 years ago, I think.
How old are you now?
Good question. 53. Yeah, 53.
But you had to think about it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did actually.
Can you tell me why you spent time in prison?
Because I got caught. A lot of drink driving and, just a lot of mucking up when I was younger, that's all. Just the area I grew up in, really.
And over the course of your life, how much time have you spent in prison?
Probably about 10 years.
The last time you went to jail, was it for an armed robbery? Is that right?
Yeah. It wasn't really meant to be an armed robbery. It was meant to be a repossession of a car. And the person that was with me had a rifle, and I didn't know nothing about it, which everybody says that, but I really didn't know nothing about it, you know what I mean?
What's it like being in jail if you have an ABI?
Pretty scary. Yeah, pretty scary. I've been in jail all different times, but this time with the ABI after the head-on crash, for sure, it was totally different. Scary. Forgot all my skills, sort of more or less, so yeah.
Can you tell me why it's scary?
Just not knowing anyone. Pretty vicious world out there. It's pretty full on. A lot of people take advantage of you if you're a bit slow or a bit, you know. You've got to really watch who you talk to and when. You just got to watch out who's who in the zoo, sort of thing.
Are you talking about violence, or are you talking about people maybe taking what little money you have?
Yeah, no, that's right, manipulating, yeah. Just violence and both. It's a sort of standover world in there. Whether you got an ABI or not, it's a standover world in there. You know, you're still a big dog. But yeah, no, you will be, that, if they can see an inch, they'll take a mile. Yeah, definitely.
Do you try and talk to the authorities or the people running the prison about what your situation is and how you would say you should be treated?
I was pretty much seeing a psych, trying to see the psych every day. I was asking for help every day. I mean, every day. And just saying, look, there's something wrong with me. You know, like, you know, I'm not, like, wanting anything for nothing or different. I don't want anything different. I'm just saying that there is something wrong with me. I had a head-on crash, you know. I've got a brain injury, for sure. So, yeah.
How did the prison guards or the prison authorities respond when you raised these issues?
Some help, some don't. Some couldn't really give a shit. So, you know, it's the same as anything. It's the same as anywhere. Because, I mean, you got to look at it in the fact that there's hundreds of people in there doing the same thing, and they're conning them. But I'm not, You know what I mean? I'm real. So, yeah, they're just trying to get drugs. I'm not trying to get drugs. I don't want drugs, sticky drugs.
So you're saying that some people claim to have ABIs or any other kind of need because they want medications, but they want to use it as a recreational drug as opposed to as a medication.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Dave, who's part of the Enabling Justice Project, delivered by Jesuit Social Services and RMIT's Centre for Innovative Justice. The project wants to address the overrepresentation of people with acquired brain injury in the criminal justice system. Bridget Henley works with Jesuit Social Services.
The medical definition of an ABI is any injury to the brain after birth. And common causes, I suppose, of brain injury are things like a stroke, car accidents, head injuries, violence, and drug and alcohol use. In the community, we know that about 2% of the population have an acquired brain injury. In prison, however, a 2011 study by Corrections Victoria found that 42% of men in prison and 33% of women in prison had a confirmed ABI.
So how does an ABI affect the way you live or go through the world?
An acquired brain injury or an ABI doesn't impact on everyone in exactly the same way. That's part of the complexity with ABI. However, memory loss, particularly short-term memory loss, poor concentration is a feature of having an acquired brain injury. Difficulty absorbing new information is a struggle. Lack of consequential kinds of thinking is also really common, depending on which area of the brain has been affected.
Johnny, like many participants in the Enabling Justice Project, developed an acquired brain injury as a result of long-term serious drug use. When he was sentenced to 10 years jail for an armed robbery, he used a number of strategies to hide his ABI from his fellow prisoners.
You know, I'd run 10Ks every day just to keep away from people. And exercise was the way I got around it. And they'd sort of like talk to me then. Because the ABI was gone because I was in this different mode. I was in a running, exercise mode. But, I got a good job while I was in there, and that took a lot of time. That looked a lot of brain time, and I had a good team of people working with me, other prisoners.
Where did you work in the prison?
I was head cook in the kitchen for a lot of years. It was fantastic. As long as it kept me occupied, and it kept all my associates that work with me occupied as well, so they didn't really have a lot of choice to ask me about what's wrong with you, man, which was good because it wasn't the 2 weeks away. I knew how to cook 10 years before that. So that's where I get me all my stuff from, you know. It's long term, I can remember, but short term, it just doesn't happen, you know.
People don't tell their fellow inmates about the ABI because they might lose status or they might be taken advantage of.
Lose status? If you're a high-standing member in a little community of blokes, next minute you could be not their friends and they want to bash you or stab you or whatever because they think you're not right, you're not the norm. And once you're in the yard and there's no officers around, hell can break loose just because you've got ABI, you know? I sort of put a fake cover. I had to put a fake cover on to be the normal Johnny, you know. There's a lot more other people that you got to be wary of, you know what I mean? They take advantage of you. Like, you go to a canteen, you buy a heap of stuff, or well, with whatever money you got. Next minute, if you're not on the ball, you'll have people taking your stuff off you, standing over you.
Do you think sometimes your symptoms of ABI were treated as non-compliance? You've got a symptom of ABI, you can't remember something or you don't follow an instruction and the prison authorities think, okay, you're acting up, you're trying to deliberately cause trouble.
Oh, of course, yeah. I've been actually thrown in the slot a few times for that. Yeah, going against orders and stuff like that. Like they send you up to a medical to get your meds or whatever. Me, I just go wandering because I wouldn't even know what they let us out for. And you're wandering around, then you don't even know where you are. You've got to be back with everyone else. And if you're not back, well, where are you? You know, and that's the ABI that's acting up on you. And some days can be worse than others. And that's the way it is.
Were you in prison for one long stint, or have you been in and out of prison for a while?
It was one long stint, close to, we'll go three quarters of the way to 10 years. And then there was breaking parole. Three times I broke the parole because I needed to go back there because I was having drama with people on the outside then with the ABI. So I didn't know where my safe place was in life. I was sort of like between a rock and a hard place type of thing, if you understand where I'm going. I couldn't really relate to my wife and my little boy didn't know. I just had to pick a safe place.
Are you telling me that when you got out, it was hard on the outside with the ABI and in some ways it was easier to go back inside? Is that what you're telling me?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I conditioned my body to be in a prison. That's routine. You know, I knew that once I got that idea of routine, which was a bit hard, you know, a couple of months sometimes it used to take to get the routine of bells and sirens and stuff and this is happening or that's happening. But once I had that down pat, I knew I was a bit more safer.
You're now out of jail. How have you learnt to cope on the outside with the ABI?
With great difficulty. I've had so many ups and downs about the ABI, you know. I've locked myself in my room for weeks and weeks on end, on my flat. The depression, the anxiety, everything that was going with it, that I'm trying to make my brain think about something that I couldn't remember, and that is so hard.
This is the Law Report on RN, Radio Australia, ABC News Radio, and on the ABC Radio app. And of course, available anytime, anywhere as a podcast. Damien Carrick with you. Today, we're looking at acquired brain injury and the criminal justice system. Bridget Henley, if there's this massive overrepresentation of people in jails with acquired brain injury, is there a link between ABIs and offending, violent offending?
I think where the link lies is really in terms of disadvantage and trauma. And those experiences of experiencing social disadvantage and repeated and early trauma through childhood and into adulthood put you at risk, a greater risk of acquiring a brain injury, and they also put you at greater risk of offending. Often what happens is that we see people growing up in disadvantaged households where there's often neglect, poverty, violence, mental health issues in the home. I think then that what can happen then, and what we see regularly, is that those issues move into adolescence and mental health issues in adolescence. They result in depression and anxiety as a result of that sort of early and ongoing trauma. Then often what happens is that people move into escapism or self-medicating those mental health kinds of outcomes and move into substance abuse. And then that leads often into offending behaviour and in incarceration. So where the ABI occurs in that very simplified and kind of trajectory, it really differs from person to person. But what we would go back to and what we understand from our work is that it always starts with that early and repeated sort of experiences of trauma.
I guess what you're saying to me is that even though there's this correlation, this high representation in prisons of people with acquired brain injury, it's too simplistic to say acquired brain injuries cause offending. You have to look at the bigger picture, the wider context about why people have ABIs in the first place and then how that then leads to offending.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's it'd be really nice, and sometimes it's tempting to look at, you know, for really simple sorts of solutions or as to, you know, ideas as to what causes people to offend. But it's much more complex, and it's much more, I think, to do with the structural disadvantages and unresolved trauma that we're seeing, you know, in our communities quite regularly. I mean, a recent report from Jesuit Social Services found that 6% of postcodes in Victoria account for 50% of prison admission. There's an obvious link between offending and disadvantage, and that, I think, and ABI is certainly in that mix, but it's not the causal factor.
If you've got a whole range of other disadvantages operating alongside your ABI, then you are susceptible to being caught up in the criminal justice system.
I think that's right, and I think that once you're in that system and you have an ABI, it's more difficult to get out of that system.
Simon, how old are you?
I'm 42.
And Simon, you have an acquired brain injury. How did you get that acquired brain injury?
Using drugs since I was 12, and find it very hard remembering things. It's pretty much fried.
You've spent a lot of time in jail. Why did you go to jail?
Selling drugs. I've been in and out of prison for doing stealing and all that sort of stuff to support my habit and things, but the biggest sentence I've done was 18 months.
Well, what kind of drugs were they?
Mainly ice and marijuana.
When you got out of prison, was it easy to find housing and things like that?
Not really. I ended up going to a Salvation Army place, and I had an accident with my epilepsy and ended up falling on my arm and going to hospital for a couple of months, and then I ended up being put in a rehabilitation place for another couple of months. Now I'm in an aged care place because I can't do certain things, you know, like with my arm and stuff.
So you're 42 years old and you're living in an aged care facility?
Yeah.
How long have you been at the aged care centre?
It'd be about 6 months now, 7 months, I suppose. I'm not really quite sure on how long I've been there. Like, that's part of the ABI, you know. Like, my memory's really shot.
So you've cycled in and out of prison. Your offending has been serious but non-violent. Presumably you're in a prison with lots of very serious violent offenders. What's that like for somebody with an ABI?
A lot of the time I was frightened, you know, like I didn't know what to expect, you know.
Were you assaulted when you were in prison, like physically assaulted? Did you got into fights?
Yeah, I did. I ended up getting into a fight with a few of them, the prisoners, and I ended up being put in a protection prison because of it. I was in there with people that, sex offenders and stuff like that, and people you don't want to be anywhere near, you know, and there wasn't any care for it, you know what I mean?
So far, we've been talking to people like Simon who live with acquired brain injury as a result of long-term drug use, and in Dave's case, made much worse by a car accident he caused while he was drug driving. Jenny's story is very different. From a young age, she was the victim of ongoing violence in the home.
I suffered violence from an early age in my family home. Certainly damage was done.
As a child?
Yeah, as a child, growing up.
How do you think the ABIs affected you?
My balance, my sense of balance, my memory, you know, the way that I think, my ability to recall things.
You've also had contact with the police and the criminal justice system. Tell me about that.
Sadly, I did get into relationships with violent men, and so my experiences were around intervention orders, you know, applying for them, assault, and my experiences with, you know, certain police officers were really quite shocking. I have had experience of presenting, you know, at a police station after being beaten by a particular partner at the time, and my fear and anxiety were so high, and on occasion there was nothing done. There was no response from police to take any action or do anything. At times, yeah, I did present quite frightened, terrified and upset. I said I had really, really terrible responses from police officers. And not just males either, females as well. Like an intolerance, almost like I was wasting their time. You know, they had something better to do. They couldn't be bothered, or, you know, because of the state I was in, I was upsetting them or taking up their time.
Having the ABI, do you think that affected that interaction?
Yeah, it certainly did, because there were many instances where I was asked questions and I actually couldn't think. I couldn't remember proper details or the exact order that something happened in, and I'd be called a liar or I'm making it up and you're just wasting our time. Because in the moment of something happening, I was generally fleeing for my life. And to be in a position where I'm having somebody ask me questions, what happened, when, what time, how, the exact order something happened. And if I couldn't provide the exact information in A, B, C, D order, I was written off. It wasn't taken seriously. No statement was taken. Nothing happened. I was kicked out, literally, of the station. That was it. Done. Nothing done. That's a huge way that my ABIs affected me, that I just, or even sometimes that I couldn't say what I knew had happened. I either couldn't say it quick enough or I couldn't recall accurately enough. And it would just be a big dismissal.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you'd want to say or talk about that we haven't already discussed?
There's probably a lot that I want to talk about, but I think suffering, and that's the appropriate word, suffering, family violence, at the hands of my family members from a really young age, and all of my life choices were dictated to as a direct result of that, and any men in my life were incredibly violent, and having my home smashed and having to move all the time and to be fleeing for my life and not being able to settle somewhere. And it's really easy to make judgments about people, but the truth is there's usually something much, much more going on. And there is, and there was, and there has been for me. And it's not about throwing responsibility onto somebody else. I'm not trying to say that. But I was fashioned very young to make certain choices and to be a certain way. And sustaining injuries along the way has really hampered me to do the things that I see other people do or that I really wanted to do.
There's very little research done into the intersection of violence and acquired brain injury. What we have heard from the participants in our project is that it is common, and that particularly among women and children, that family violence is probably quite a strong cause of acquired brain injury. I mean, we know a lot of women in prison have experienced family violence and sexual violence. We also know that a lot of them now, from that 2011 study, at least a third of them have an acquired brain injury.
Bridget Henley, does having an ABI potentially make you more susceptible to being a victim of crime as well as being caught up as a perpetrator in the criminal justice system?
Definitely. And I think what we kind of can see through the lives of the participants that we work with is that whilst we have an adversarial system that uses labels like victim and offender, for many of the people involved in the system, especially the ones we're working with ABI and other complex needs, those labels really don't contribute much to our understanding of them. Many of them have had repeated experiences of victimisation going back to childhood, and they've also, as we know, have offended. Yeah, absolutely.
Jenny says she came to police stations after being beaten by a partner and she was distraught, and because of the ABI was unable to explain her situation to police with sufficient detail, and therefore she was really dismissed and treated with disrespect. Is that common for ABIs to be victims of crime and also for them to be unable to get the protection that they need? Yeah. Because of it?
ABI is not well understood in the community, and it's not well understood probably by a lot of police members as well. So I think that's part of it. And I think sometimes when people like Jenny fail to, recall events and timelines, specifically, that's then discounted or seen in a particular way by police. And the role of their disability is not taken into account, I suppose, in her challenges in retelling those sorts of stories and experiences. So I think that's part of it.
With respect to Jenny, I believe that she's also been an offender. So she's also had contact with police and the criminal justice system as an offender. Do you sometimes find that people are both victims of crime and offenders?
If you've been a perpetrator, I mean, I guess, again, we're stuck in that system of victim and offender, and perhaps if you have been a perpetrator, to walk into a police station then as a victim, maybe that those labels are attached to you and you're not seen perhaps as, or your victim status is maybe not as taken as seriously as it might be.
So the 5th of 05, I got hit as a pedestrian by a tram. And that gave me frontal lobe and left temporal lobe damage. And it sort of changed me completely as a person. I'd sort of lost the person I was, and I lost a lot of the living skills that people take for granted. I had to use a diary to remember to function. Without support services, it made it next to impossible trying to get housing. And that caused the merry-go-round syndrome of constantly not having somewhere to stay. It gets pretty cold in winter and you get a little bit hungry, and you do what you have to do to live another day.
You re-offend.
Yeah, well, you have to.
Steve, can I ask how much time over the years have you spent in prison?
Most of my adult life.
And do you think if there had been a different approach when you would come out of prison, then you might not have gone back?
Oh, for sure. If there was support services, I mean, let's face it, we're not vote winners to help, you know, criminals, you know, people get called crim lovers and things like that. But you might save money by not helping them upon release, giving them half a dole check. They can't even buy clothing to fit them because they've put that much weight on, let alone housing. And so it starts all again. And because of our mental impairment and not knowing how to cope with it, you go back to what you know, and that's the things that got you locked up.
And have you found yourself sometimes homeless when you've emerged from prison?
Oh, that's been my major problem, is homelessness. I've slept in tents, I've slept in cars, couch surfing.
Was the housing available but hard to access because you've got an ABI, or there just ain't no housing for people coming out of prison?
Both.
We need better support for people as they go through the criminal justice system. We also need better support for people and accommodation options for people as they leave prison that help them, I think, to understand the way their ABI impacts on them, that help them to live as independently as possible in the community. If we don't provide them that with that support, we're really consigning them to a life of homelessness, substance abuse, offending and incarceration, and that revolving door.
Sounds expensive.
It does sound expensive, but it's probably not as expensive as the $100,000 a year that we spend on incarcerating prisoners. And also, I think, you know, the benefits in terms of our own safety and of community safety generally, if we can address the underlying causes of these people's offending, which is ABI, which is substance abuse, which is homelessness, if we started to address those, we would see a big change in behaviour.
Bridget Henley from Jesuit Social Services speaking there about the Enabling Justice Project. It's being delivered by both Jesuit Social Services and RMIT's Centre for Innovative Justice. That's the Law Report for this week. Big thanks to producer Anita Barrow and also technical producer Brendan O'Neill. Talk to you next week with more Law.